G'day, Janine.
Hi, Luke. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. Luke, I spoke to you a while ago, well, back in May, about my mum in a nursing home.
Did you remind me what we talked about?
She was about to turn 100, and you were talking about the lockdowns and things with nursing homes with coronavirus, and
yeah.
I rang to say that we were particularly lucky with my mum in the nursing home, that we had a good nursing home, so and everything was going well.
How is she?
She's great. Yeah, she's had her 100th birthday and everything went really well.
Did she get a letter from the Queen?
Finally, yes.
It did come, did it?
Yeah. It was about a week and a half, 2 weeks later. So,
is it signed by Her Royal Highness?
It certainly is.
It's not, is it?
Well, look, I think it's one of those, you know, things that they have printed up. But it's got her name on it. It's specifically addressed to her. And there's a lovely photo of the Queen and, you know, her well wishes for the future, however long it may be.
So did you frame it?
I haven't got that far yet because she actually got certificates from Scott Morrison, the Queen, the Governor General, David Hurley, and his wife, and also the local Member for Parliament. We don't have one from Dan yet, but I think that he may be otherwise occupied.
He's got a few things on.
He does. So I've got to work out a way that we can get everything framed in a nice fashion, but we're in lockdown still, so I can't even get into the nursing home. So everything's in there with her and it will just stay that way for the moment. So
are you happy with the way the nursing home's treating
mum? At the moment,
yeah.
Yep, they're fantastic.
You can't get in there?
No. We Skype regularly. I Skype her about four times a week and our other family members Skype her on the other
day. She knows how to do all that, does she?
The nursing home sets it up and leaves the iPad in front of her and we talk. And we talk for 40, 45 minutes at a time. So,
they're
fantastic. We get an email every week to say what's going on. So they're in touch with us regularly and they've been fantastic. So I can't fault them. We're really lucky, really lucky.
Well, isn't that fantastic? So, my mum's in the nursing home, but it's self-assist. So there is a nurse on duty 24/7, but mum's in a separate unit and basically she looks after herself. She has help.
Yes.
Like we've organised through agencies, her bed gets changed twice a week, the linen gets changed, the kitty litter gets emptied, the washing up's done. And the elevator, can you believe it? The place where my mum's at, the elevator's been broken for 8 weeks.
Oh, God.
I'm not kidding.
That's crazy.
8 weeks this elevator has been out of action. So the real oldies can't get up and down. The dining room's on the middle floor.
Yep.
So they've got to deliver meals to rooms and do that sort of thing.
And this is why we chose somewhere that was single level and small.
Yeah.
So very different. You know, we didn't want to have to deal with elevators and things like that. So,
well,
anyway.
At mum's, there's only one elevator. And I visit her every weekend. And more often than not, the elevator's broken.
Yep. It's not good enough.
It's not good enough, is it?
No. And not with the money that they pay.
And there's only one elevator.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
But mum's best friend, Auntie Sylvia, she's 3 years older than mum, so she's 94, and she's in full care. And I was talking to her son the other day because our two mums have been best friends all their lives. And Pete can't go and see his mum at all. Yeah. If he goes there, he has to talk through a glass panel like you're visiting someone at jail.
Yeah. Well, for a while there, we had visits, face-to-face visits in the hairdressing salon at the front of the facility. But I haven't actually been into mum's room for 4 months. But when the girls set up the Skype call, sometimes I'll just get them to turn the iPad around and just, you know, I'll have a bit of an eyeball of what's going on around the room and make sure that everything's looking okay. So usually it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're very lucky.
You know, when you send someone to a nursing home, and it's a very sad thing to have to do.
Horrible.
You really are at their mercy. You just pray and hope that what goes
Absolutely.
On when you're not there is A-okay.
Yep. And that's the one thing that, you know, a couple of family members, we were talking last week and we were actually saying that, you know, we're very lucky with this nursing home, that the manager that we have is just amazing. And if it wasn't for her, we wouldn't be sleeping so well at night. You know, we still worry. Because of coronavirus, you know, the chance of it getting in there. But we worry less because we know that this manager's onto it. You know, she's just really, she's really supportive of the staff, but she's also very firm in making sure that they're doing what they're meant to be doing. So, yeah, you know, it's good.
Well, I'm glad Mum's okay. But you wanted to talk about men and men's health.
I did. Men and men who don't go to doctors.
Listen
when
to
they
this, folks.
Do.
Men, yep. Men, listen to what Janine's got to say.
My husband passed away 12 years ago, and it was something that was so simple and could have been sorted out.
What was it?
It was a squamous cell carcinoma on his lip. And he'd been a smoker for many years, on and off, worked in the building industry, and a lot of them smoked.
Yep.
He'd also been a cricketer since he was knee-high to a grasshopper.
So he's out in the sun.
Yep, and he was a keeper. So he was out in the sun, you know, for hours on end. And he had this little sore on his lip and didn't really do anything about it. It would come and go.
When you say a little sore...
It was like a cold sore.
Like a cold sore on his lip. And how long had he had it?
Oh, before it got really bad, it was about 5 years.
And was it something you would notice?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, while it was coming and going, it was okay because you kind of did think it was just a cold sore, like a stress thing.
Mm.
But there was one weekend when he was really sore and itchy down his left side, and he asked me to have a look, and I thought it looked like shingles.
Mm.
And so I'd said to him, you really need to get to the doctor because you can get an antiviral and, you know, it'll stop that really nasty nerve pain that you can get. And he rang me from work the next day and said, tell me again, what's this, you know, what's the symptoms? And I told him again. And that night he went to the work cover doctor.
Mm.
And the work cover doctor misdiagnosed the shingles. Because I work in a pharmacy and I'd seen lots of things over the years, and my husband said to him that, you know, my wife thinks it's shingles, and this old Harry High Pants GP said, don't be ridiculous, what would she know? She's not a doctor, she's not a pharmacist, she's not a nurse. And then, of course, my husband asked him about the lip while he was there, and again he said, don't be ridiculous, it's not cancer, didn't offer to biopsy it, just said it's a stress cold sore, it'll come and go.
Said it was a stress cold sore, right?
Yeah, yeah, but it was actually a squamous cell carcinoma, which is the worst one, or one of the worst ones that you can get. It needs to be dealt with and dealt with very quickly. And he chose to believe the GP and said, well, no, he said it's not cancer, so it's
see,
all
he
right.
He would have been, a lot of men would have gone, phew, I've seen a doctor.
Yep.
The doctor says nothing to worry about.
Absolutely.
As you were, sir, business as usual.
Yeah. Head in the sand, it's okay. And even when it did start, you know, it came and then it stayed. It didn't disappear. And quite a few of us said to him, you know, you really need to go and get that dealt with. And at the time, you know, just before that, there was another GP that we went to and he got on really well with her. She was my GP. Then she moved to the country and, of course, he didn't find himself another GP because he just didn't like doctors, didn't trust them.
Yep.
And so didn't go to anybody. And then it got to the stage where this sore was coming and staying, didn't disappear. And a few of us said to him, you really need to get that looked at. And he's like, yeah, no, it's all right, it's okay. And a few of his workmates had said the same thing. And then it was probably about 5 years on. And one weekend I'd come home from work on a Saturday afternoon and he was lying on the couch and it was over Christmas. He'd grown a bit of a beard because he was on holidays and he'd been outside doing some work under the house and I could see this little pink spot on his jaw.
On his jaw?
In the midst of this bit of beard that he'd grown.
Not his lip, his jaw.
No, his lip was still happening but it had started at the jaw. And I said to him, what the hell's that? And he said, oh, I think I've been bitten by a spider. I've been under the house. And I said, well, if you've been bitten by a spider, we need to deal with it. You know, you need to let me get you to the hospital. You know, it could be nasty. And he said, no, it's all right, don't worry. And I said, just sit up for a minute for me. Let me have a look. And the whole side of his face was swollen. I said, well, we at least need to get an antihistamine into you and let me get a dressing onto it. And he just flatly refused. And in the end, I just looked at him and said, are you freaking crazy? This, you don't get it. This on your jaw is your lip saying, hello, you haven't paid enough attention to me and I'm going to go further.
You were right.
And 3 weeks later, he finally let me take him to the doctor And if I hadn't been with him, he actually said that he would have turned around and walked away. And the doctor wasn't even going to touch it. He just referred straight to the Alfred. And we were in at the Alfred 2 days later in the ENT clinic. And they had planned to do surgery. It was about 3 weeks, because he needed to have something like 15 hours of surgery. They were going to cut off the lip, cut out the jawbone, take out the jugular vein, take out lymph nodes, take a piece of bone from the shin to replace the jaw, and do a skin flap from either the thigh or the buttock. So it was going to be 15 hours. So they needed to set up the ICU, the theatre, with nurses and plastic surgeons and ENTs, and then the ICU, because it was going to be involving the airways. He wouldn't be able to eat or drink. So, you know, it was all very, you know, big deal. And the day that he went to have a feed tube put into the abdomen, into the stomach, because he wouldn't be able to eat or drink, they realised that, it was just, it grew exponentially. It was crazy. It went from a 5 cent piece to, in 3 weeks, it went to probably about 5 centimetres. And then by the time he had the feed tube put in, all of the heart chemicals had been upset and they thought he was going to have a heart attack. We ended up in cardiothoracic that night. And by the Saturday morning, this was a Friday night, by the Saturday morning, I was out in the hallway washing my hands, and the head ENT and the plastic surgeon had come. They'd already been into the room to see him, and then they saw me out in the hallway and said, you know, we need to talk, and said, sorry, but it's too late. We didn't realise how aggressive it was and how advanced it was. And so I said, well, okay, how long's he got? So they said 6 months, and pretty much 6 months to the day. Yeah, and this thing was revolting. It got to the point where his whole lip was completely crusted over. He couldn't eat or drink. The tumour on the jaw was massive. I was doing his dressings every day, and I was using 20 to 30 centimetre strips of non-stick dressing, and ended up, you know, by the end of it, had to be wrapping them around his neck with some crepe, with a crepe bandage, because they just couldn't stay on. And it was just horrendous.
And it started from a little niggle in his lip, and 5 years ago.
Yep. 6 years. A cold sore. Oh, well, he actually passed away 12 years ago, so it was about five years.
From the moment he passed away. You found him sitting on the lounge with that beard that you were talking about, and he thought he'd been bitten by a spider, and you said that was 5 years later.
Before, yeah, exactly.
Oh. Mm. And the work covered doctor said nothing to be worried about.
Yeah, nothing to be worried about. Don't be ridiculous.
And like me, he would have said to his wife, a qualified doctor has told me that's nothing to be worried about. I can relax now. Stop bothering me, woman.
And that exactly. And that's what he said to all of his workmates, and what he said to friends of ours who were nurses. And in his mind, it was all okay. You know, he was just, there was nothing wrong. And, I was listening to that talk, that gentleman that you called in last night, and he'd lost his wife 14 months earlier. And I nearly rang you then, and then I didn't. And I just heard you talking again tonight when you introduced the show, and I just thought, no, I need to ring you tonight. There's something that's telling me. You have so many men that listen to this program, and they just need to know that they need to be a little bit more responsible, because that's the thing. You know, my husband was who he was. He was a beautiful man. The family adored him. However, you've got to take some responsibility for your own health. And while in the first place it was the GP's issue, because he said, don't worry about it, but as it became worse, you know, my husband should have gone and dealt with it. But I guess he was frightened, like most men, and unless they're bleeding from the ears, you're not going to do anything about it. And even then you'd be pushed.
You know, Nikki has a family member who died a long time ago now, an uncle. And his wife suspected he had a prostate problem, and he refused to get it tested until things got way too late. And then eventually he did get his PSA taken, and it was all there in the blood test. And he refused to get the digital test because that's the sort of bloke he was.
Yep.
Anyway, so they took some they took a biopsy, and they said, you need surgery. You need to have your prostate removed immediately. And he'd heard that that would might render him impotent. So he said, no, I'll put up with it. I refuse to be less than a man. And he died.
And the thing that you said earlier that, you know, was the other catalyst for me calling was about, you know, it's not just about yourself, it's about those around you, you know. I mean, I remember, well, we met when I was not even 16, he was 19, and we were married when I was 19, so 3 years later. We just missed our 30th wedding anniversary. He was my best buddy. We'd done loads of travelling together and we had a really, really good life.
Yep.
You know, we had our hassles like everybody does. No marriage is ever perfect. But, you know, we didn't have any kids. I wasn't able to have them. And I'm one of triplets, and my triplet sister had three children, and we were their godparents, and they adored Unky Pete. And I remember, you know, my niece, the oldest one, saying to him when she was quite young at school, when they were learning about health and, you know, all sorts of things, about smoking. And she used to say to him, Unky Pete, please don't smoke. I don't want you to die. And he'd say, it's all right. You know, I'll be fine. Don't worry. Don't worry. And bingo. And it's just devastated our whole family. So it's not just, you know, about him, as you say. It's about everybody else in the family. You've got a responsibility, people who love you and care about you. And they don't want to, number one, you don't want to see somebody like that. And how the hell do you wake up every day knowing that you're going to die and you don't know when? You know, this tumour was involved with this carotid artery. It could have blown any minute. I stopped work for 6 months to care for him. And I would come home, if I'd had to go out and get prescriptions or supermarket or whatever, I would come home and I would stick my head through the front door and I would peer into the lounge room very gingerly because I didn't know whether he was going to be dead in the chair. You know, it was frightening. He was too frightened to go to sleep at night. Half the time he would sleep sitting up because his tumour was so big and he was frightened that it was just going to burst. It was just horrible, you know.
Janine, what a story. So you are talking to a lot of men listening right now. Janine, what's your message?
Just don't be so stubborn. Just get yourself to a doctor. And if you're still not sure, get to another doctor. Just don't ignore stuff. It's not about, it's not just about you. It's about your family and people who love you, you know. And that's the reason that I rang tonight. I'd thought about it last night, but tonight I just thought, no, I have to. I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but, you know, if someone had told me when I married him at almost 19 that he would be gone by the time I was 48, I would have just laughed at them and said, don't be ridiculous. I had visions of us, you know, being in the local paper after 60 years of marriage and people asking us, what, you know, what's your secret? And it's all gone. It's gone. I've got lovely memories, but I don't have him. And it hurts. So, yeah, people need to just, men particularly need to be just a little bit more responsible and don't just think about themselves, think about everybody else around them and take care of yourself. Absolutely.
What a call.
Sorry. You wanted people to make you laugh.
No,
tonight,
Janine.
And it's not happening.
Janine, you have no idea how many lives you may have just saved.
Well, that's what I hope.
Because this friend of Nikki's, her band leader, he was only 49.
Yep.
He dropped out of a heart attack. And I said to Nick, you know, I've been good to my body over the years and I've also hammered it. And I felt an overwhelming responsibility when I saw the devastation that Lane's passing had left.
Exactly.
I said, bugger it, I'm going to the doctor. And I had full blood tests and I had the results from my echo stress heart test. I had the test last Friday. The doctor got the results and we went and had the talk on Saturday. Luckily, it's all good. But I had an overwhelming urge of responsibility to go and get it all done and to make adjustments. And there are going to have to be adjustments to my diet, but I'm glad I went and did it.
Absolutely. And that was, the other thing that you were saying last night about, you know, what do you say to people who have lost their partners and how to get through it? You know, I was very fortunate because Pete had gone to palliative care. The DHHS provided a counsellor, a bereavement counsellor, and she came to me at home for 13 months and I saw her fortnightly. And in between that, I'd had access to another psychologist that I'd seen years before, and I had access to her. So I had someone every week I was talking to, psychologist, grief counsellor, psychologist, grief counsellor. And then I joined a support group, the Younger Partners, and it was run through the Centre for Grief and Bereavement, and they were amazing as well. So, you know, I did that for probably about 4 years, and I reckon it was a good 5-6 years before I could say my name straight without crying because, you know, he wasn't here. And you know, we were just best buddies, meant to be together. So, you know, there's a long road ahead of you when you lose somebody that you adore. And it's bloody hard work. And there are days when you just don't want to play. You want to do a doona dive. And yet, you know, there were also nights when I struggled to get to sleep. And I never forget one night actually calling Griefline at about 2 o'clock in the morning because I was beside myself, didn't know where to put myself. And, you know, I couldn't believe it. I got a recorded message to say that they were busy and would I like to call back. It's like, really? You know, it was just crazy.
Maybe these grief lines need more funding.
They do, absolutely.
So that there are more real people there. Lifeline 13 11 14. If you need to talk to somebody now, hopefully they're there. It's 24/7, it's free. Janine, thank you so much for calling.
No worries. Thank you for letting me talk and share my story, Luke. And I really do hope that some of those guys listening out there, you know, really take it on board. And if it saves a life, well, hey, all been worth it.
Thank you, Janine. You take care. Call back anytime.
Yep. Thanks, Luke.
You promise?
Thank you. Yeah, I will do. Thank you. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
What a call. What a call. And if you'd like someone else to hear what Janine had to say, Jess will make that call a separate clip on our podcast at the end of the day, so that if you'd like to recommend Janine's conversation to a stubborn bastard that you know that won't go and get checked up, please recommend the Night Shift podcast. It'll be there at the end of the program as a separate clip. Janine, well done for ringing up. I wonder how many lives Janine has just saved. This is the Night Shift on Triple M.